Anderson.
Here.
Bagby.
Here.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Carson.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Cohey.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Dirks.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Gilmore.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Hales.
Here.
Hallinan.
Here.
Hammonds.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Harvey.
Here.
Illaway.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Jorgensen.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
McComey.
Here.
Mercer.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Millen.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Pedersen.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Philp.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Simlick.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Steward.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
60 present.
The prayer today is to be given by the Reverend Barb Garrard, representing the First Presbyterian Church here in Cheyenne. Reverend Garrard.
Let us pray. Lord God, we thank you for this special day where we, the people of the Equality State, remember Dr. Martin Luther King and his positive response to your call to him to live, work, and die to further the cause of equality becoming a reality in this country. And Lord God, Creator and Redeemer, we further praise you for how this drive for equality has led to this very opportunity for men and women of different races, creeds, and political parties to come together to speak to you and to seek your help in making decisions for the people of Wyoming. There is so much to do in a short number of days, Lord, so we ask that your same breath, your same spirit that swept over the formless void and darkness of the first day of creation, move over this legislative body to create light to shine upon the issues before us, so that your will may be made known and to cause there to be order when chaos seems to reign. At the end of this day, we pray you will see what has been done and call it good. In your name we pray, Lord. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 16, 2009 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Barbuto, Representative Moniz.
Members of the House, today we celebrate Wyoming Equality Day, a holiday to commemorate the life and legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. This is a day for celebration, and joining us to pay tribute to Dr. King is our very own Harriet Elizabeth Byrd. Liz served in both houses of the Wyoming legislature. She served in the House from 1981 to 1989 and served in the Senate from 1989 to 1992. Senator Byrd was the driving force behind passage of today's holiday here in Wyoming. She introduced legislation to make a birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. a holiday. Her bill was signed into law in 1990, declaring the third Monday in January a Wyoming holiday to celebrate civil rights and equality for all. Please join me in extending a very warm welcome to former Senator Harriet Liz Byrd and the father of current Representative James Byrd. Harriet, please excuse me. I don't think anyone would mistake you for James's father, but you are his mother.
That's all right. This is all right. Is this on? Okay. Well, it's a real honor to be here today. And my grandson, this is David Shea, he's over here. He thought that I couldn't walk up here and stand up here by myself, so his mother sent me to be my guiding angel today. So this is David Shea, my grandson. And we also have some members of the Love and Charity Club who were very helpful in trying each and every year to be the background help in trying to get the Martin Luther King holiday. Well, Mr. Speaker and members of the House of Representatives, it is an honor and a pleasure to be here today to celebrate and honor a man who spent his whole life working for unity, justice, and peace. It was Dr. Martin Luther King. And his words of peace have been heard around the world. His struggles were for the rights of all mankind. Dr. King had a dream, and his mission was to help the poor and help the hungry and the deprived, the sick, the elderly, the persecuted, the handicapped, the homeless, and the unemployed. He strived for equal rights for everyone. Dr. King was against violence, terror, hate, and dishonesty. He did not like shady deals and policies of unfair rules and unjust practices. And he did not like these unjust things in the workplace. He demanded equal opportunity and honesty for all Americans. He wanted to give all Americans a reason to believe and to hope and to know that the future would be better than we have had in the past. Today, we recall his devotion and dedication to all mankind and the world. He gave the world a challenge and a message of peace. Today, there is hope. And tomorrow, President Obama will be our President-elect Obama will become our president. Hopefully tomorrow there will be change. And you can believe today and tomorrow the dream is alive. We will build a strong and better America. We will find the answer to the foreclosures and the loss of homes and the loss of jobs. We will try to slow down the financial bleeding of our economy. And we want to provide better health care in this great nation. We must put highways and railroads and airlines and water transport and transportation back on its feet again. We must invest in wind and solar energy and work to find better ways for flood control and water storage. We must use American coal, oil, and gas, and most of all, make and buy American products. And we must take care of the global warming. And yes, we can keep all of these dreams alive. Yes, we can. It is up to each and every one of us as Americans and American citizens to keep this nation strong. We must keep the American dream alive. We shall overcome. And yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for being here this morning. It's great to see you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you
so
much.
This is a great day.
Thank you, Senator Byrd. Thank you, David, for being here this morning. The next item on our agenda is introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill number 184.
House Bill 184, introduced by Representative Anderson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to taxation and revenue, mineral taxes, audit, and refund.
House Bill number 184 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 186.
House Bill 186, introduced by Representative Anderson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to fuel tax, gasoline tax, agricultural exemption.
House Bill number 186 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 189.
House Bill 189, introduced by Representative Shepperson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to revenue and taxation, property tax assessed valuation.
House Bill number 189 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 70.
House Bill 70, introduced by Representative Berger.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to water, landowner flexibility, and fisheries protection and restoration.
House Bill 70 is referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 8.
House Joint Resolution number 8, introduced by Representative Wallace.
First reading of the bill.
A joint resolution urging Congress to oppose federal legislation that interferes with a state's ability to direct the transport or processing of horses.
House Joint Resolution number 8 is referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 9.
House Joint Resolution number 9, introduced by Representative Simpson.
First reading of the bill.
A joint resolution to encourage county officials to take a protective approach to burgeoning wind energy resource development.
House Joint Resolution 9 is referred to Committee number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 179.
House Bill 179, introduced by Representative Hallinan.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to highway funding, Phase 2 study, I-80 tolling.
House Bill number 179 is referred to Committee number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 180.
House Bill 180, introduced by Representative Miller.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public transit funding.
House Bill number 180 is referred to committee number 8, Transportation. The next bill for consideration is House Bill number 190.
House Bill 190, introduced by Representative Throne.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to suspension of driver's licenses for non-payment of child support.
House Bill number 190 is referred to committee number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 192.
House Bill number 192, introduced by Representative Brechtel.
House Bill, first reading of the bill.
An act relating to defense forces and affairs regarding military scholarships.
House Bill number 192 is referred to committee number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 44.
House Bill 44, introduced by Senator Jorgensen.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to professions and occupations, surveyors and engineers.
House Bill number 44 is referred to committee number, which one was it, Patty? 9, Minerals. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 107, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Korberg, No, Mercer, Peasley, Throne. Signed, representing Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 164, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Korberg, No, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 140, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Anderson, Edmonds, Escobel, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlek, Wallace. Signed, Representative Anderson, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 33, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Yagi, Lubno, McKim, McComey, Teeters, No, Brechtel. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 23, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 24, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 88, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 93, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 29, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 111, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
We are at that order of business of bills on second reading. House Bill 56, pursuant to House Rule 9-3C, House Bill 56 will be laid back for an extra day. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 57.
House Bill 57, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to property owner of pore space dominance of mineral estate.
House Bill 57, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 58.
House Bill 58, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to carbon sequestration, responsibility of injectors and pore space owners.
House Bill number 58, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 62.
House Bill 62, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to charter school law amendments.
House Bill 62, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We are at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 5.
House Bill 5, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, interstate compact for supervision of parolees, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Oh, excuse me. We do not have an amendment. Will the chief clerk please call the roll? Excuse me. House Bill 5, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft. Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Patton. Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 ayes.
House Bill 5, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 5 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 55. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Representative Harvey, we need to read the act.
House Bill 55, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to courts regarding judicial vacancies, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move the adoption of a third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 55. And, Mr. Speaker, I'm bringing this for discussion purposes only. I was in the chair when this was brought up for the first time, and it is a question I would have asked on the floor, and I was asleep during second reading and didn't get this amendment passed. But the question that this amendment seeks to answer is, if we move if a person applies to be a judge in a new area, then he is aware of the housing markets, he's aware of moving expenses, and he's actually seeking to apply, just like all the rest of us who seek to apply for a job somewhere. We understand the costs that would be incurred. But this is with the judges that are already seated. They're the ones who are being asked to move. They're not applying for a new job. They're just in the job that they are in. Most private companies pay for relocation costs when they ask an employee to move from one area to another. And with today's volatile market, he may live in an area that he may not be able to sell a house or may have to sell a house at a loss. He may be asked to be moving to an area where housing may be tight, and the housing market prices are different. And so my question and what this amendment seeks to answer is, will the state help them in that case?
Chairman Gingrey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This appears to be a good amendment that actually, I think, helps the bill. There was some testimony from the Chief Justice that he would only use this power when someone retires. So let's say the judge is sitting in Warland, the judge in Warland retires, and it turns out Thermopolis is actually the town that because of caseload, they'd rather have the sitting circuit court judge sit in. So upon retirement, he would order the new guy that's coming in to live in the other town. Now, when you apply for the job and go through the Judicial Nominating Committee, you're going to know which town they're sending you to. So that person, we don't need to pay to place. But one of the questions that was asked of the Chief Justice, would you ever use this power to move a sitting judge, a judge that's not retiring, he just happens to be living in some certain town that has no cases. Nothing's going on in that town, and the Supreme Court needs to move him to a different town. The Chief Justice said he can't imagine ever using that power, but he thought it should be in the bill just in case. So if that situation did arise, which appeared to be going to be rare, I think this is a good idea to assist that sitting judge in moving to the new community. So I would urge your adoption of the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? Representative Harvey.
Mr. Speaker, I failed to mention that there is a line item in the budget with the judges, according to the person who drafted this for me, that there is money available in their budget to do this. This just authorizes them to spend it in this way.
Thank you. Question being called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 55, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 55 is passed. House Bill 55, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore. Gingrey.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Peasley.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Horberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 ayes.
House Bill 55, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 55 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 67.
House Bill 67, introduced by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation of tobacco, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would actually like to move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 67 first.
Excuse me, it's third reading amendment number 1. Oh, you want to move number 2 first? Okay.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Sorry about that. Go ahead. You already did. It's been moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of this body, this is a very simple amendment that does have a very massive change to this bill, but I do believe that this sends it back to what the Revenue Committee intended to do. It adds the word moist to the definition of moist snuff. Right now, let me read you the current definition, which is found on page 2 of the bill, lines 1 through 3. Moist snuff means any finely cut, ground, or powdered tobacco intended to be placed in the oral cavity other than dry snuff. Currently, dry snuff is not defined in Wyoming law. If you go back to the law dictionary, dry snuff is a product to be used nasally. Thus, moist snuff, under the way the statute stands, allows any form of powdered or ground tobacco to be taxed as moist snuff. I guess the new product's coming out. You do have a sample product on your desk and a thing with my name in the upper corner of new products coming out that basically are weightless. And it's very difficult, I would say, to tax a product based on weight when it doesn't weigh much. I guess I would stand for any questions, but I believe that what we're trying to do is what was commonly referred to as dip cans, to do that as a weight-based product. But the new products that these tobacco companies are coming out with, in some cases, are half the size of what is on your desk. They're very concealable to be put in your mouth, especially among youth and classes, et cetera. They're easy to pass out among your friends. They're not messy. And I believe this insertion of the word moist into the definition of moist snuff takes the bill back to what was originally intended by the committee. Thank you.
Anyone in for their first time? Anyone for their second time? Question being called on third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 67. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 67 is passed. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I would like to move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 67 and ask for its favorable passage as well. You know, we've had some discussion on this bill. I thought it'd be good to bring it back up for a third round of discussion before passing it through this body. Personally, I'm opposed to the bill. I don't like how the bill came to the committee, how it came through the process. It's not brought by a state agency. I believe there are loopholes in the current bill. One of them I caught, and I think we just fixed, but I'm certain there are more, and unintended consequences of doing these actions. We debated revenue projections on this. We defeated all three of the amendments that, I guess what I believed provided a better revenue forecast for this product. They went down at various levels of support. I do believe this is bad tax policy. But this thing is so entangled in tax policy and social policy, I don't really know how to argue it based on the merits of tax policy when we seem to all have individual views of what is and what isn't good tax policy. I guess sometimes at the basic level, a bill comes to the body and you just have that feeling inside where you know you don't want to support it. This is one of those bills for me. So I thought we could have one more round of discussion on third reading if anybody else would like to make comments before we put this to a vote. So I'd stand for any discussion that may be wanted. Maybe we don't want any, but I guess we'll find out.
Chairman Cohey, for your first time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, it's easy to see what this bill is about and what is being discussed here. What is not is being discussed is also important. To many people, many in this room, this is a foul, disgusting, and crude, vile, legal product. But to many people, it isn't. It's how people entertain and relax, like having a drink before dinner, to many. This is not about whether or not to tax a legal product into non-existence, even though there are those all over the country that wish it would. What the bill is not about is social engineering to the point of making it unaffordable to underage and people that really shouldn't be using the product, whether you think so or not. What the bill is not about is a discussion on regressive taxation, meaning that the people that use the product often are those that shouldn't be using it anyway because they can't afford it, and therefore their disposable income goes towards a higher taxation rate on a legal product. That is not what it's about. It's not about a tax modifier, because you have to remember, this is an excise tax. This product also has a sales tax. The higher the value goes, ad valorem, the more sales tax is collected on the product. To me, what it is about is tax fairness. We are talking about tax policy here. Cigarettes are taxed on a per unit basis. If somebody buys a very, very expensive brand of cigarette, they pay the same excise tax as they do on a very, very poor product of cigarette. Same price. This stuff, in many people's minds, should be taxed the same way. A very expensive product should get the same value of excise tax as a very poorly priced product. It's just a matter of equity, and I'll tell you why for me. Again, this bill is not about the serious effects that spit tobacco has on some people. It's a known carcinogen. Why people use it is up to them. I certainly can't understand it, but they do. Now, what it is about is that some of those folks are going to have serious, serious problems, without a doubt. Maybe it's a small percentage of the people that use it, but they are going to have some serious problems. And again, this bill is not about that. But maybe it is, because as a policymaking body, we have to determine how, and our federal government pumps literally millions and billions of dollars into its Medicaid and Medicare programs, as we do too, to take care of some of these issues that a product like this cause. Now, that's not what the bill's about, but then again, isn't it? Because the effects of a very, very good and expensive product with an excise tax collected on it of one value are the same effects of a very, very poor product collecting a less excise tax that flows into the state's coffers that ultimately we have to spend on people that use this product that have the debilitating effects on some of those people. I'm not saying that the people that use it are those that are least afford to pay for it, but often we find many, many people that use the product in their rugged Western independent way that say, you know, I don't care what's going to happen. I'm a free white 21, whatever, pardon me. I should not have used that. That I'm certainly of age, and I'll use this product in my rugged Western independent way until something happens to them, and then somehow their thoughts are reduced to the fact that I need some help from the federal and state government to take care of my gum problems and my tooth problems. But again, that's not what the bill is about. The bill is about collecting a tax equally on a product that, regardless of what it is in your mind, has serious effects on people, and the same amount of money should be collected on a poor product as it is on a good product to take care of the issues that resolve later from the use of this product. I am in favor of the bill, Mr. Speaker, and against the amendment.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm standing up here against the bill, and I'll tell you why. In my district, I have lots of railroaders. I have roughnecks. I have timber workers. They work outside. Now, on the railroad, you're not allowed to smoke inside any railroad buildings anymore. You're not allowed to smoke on the engines. Those guys work 12 hours, day in and day out. And since you're not allowed to smoke on the train, they reverted to chewing tobacco. And these are adult men. I'm not going to stand up there and tell them, oh, you can't chew anymore because it's hard on your health. They make their own decisions. A lot of people have asked me to vote against this tax because they simply feel like they're being taxed to death. And I don't think the tax is fair, so therefore I'm going to oppose it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for the bringer of the amendment. It would seem that it is somehow being proposed to us that the bill before us is a means of using our taxation system to addict more young people to a tobacco product. And I would like to believe that it's a simple taxation bill, but because of that idea that perhaps our Wyoming tax policy might be used inadvertently to do something that would not be our desire, I need someone to explain to me the direct correlation, if in fact that is what they are alluding to. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's something in this bill for everyone. This bill involves a 31% increase in taxes for this product. And a handout that was just given to us a little bit ago shows some studies, results of some studies that were done, where a 10% increase in smokeless tobacco prices reduces adult consumption by 3.7% and youth consumption by 5.9%. Now, we're not charging just taxes on this product. The product has value as well. But if you look at these numbers, we're probably looking at possibly a 15% decrease in youth consumption of this product. The whole tax policy aspect of this bill arises from the concept that taxes on such products are known as nuisance taxes or compensatory taxes or something like that. And the idea there is what we're doing is compensating society for the ill effects that might not take place with the consumption of these products. Now, if you believe that the negative effects of a cheap brand of this product is approximately equal to the negative effects on the high-priced versions of these products, I think you have to support this bill. And also, if you feel that we should be raising these taxes to discourage the consumption of these products, you also have to be for this bill. And that's the reason I think you should consider rejecting this amendment and approving the bill when the final vote is taken. Thank you.
Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the argument, I've heard a lot of discussion about fair tax policy. Well, we as a legislature determine how we tax products and different industries. Sometimes we give tax exemptions. As you look through any product or industry, there's different tax rates for each one of them. That's my first point. My second point is I look at this as a favoritism tax. This tax has been in place forever. All of a sudden, industry's coming to us saying, we want you to tax us. I say, what? You want us to tax you? Well, yes, they do. And here's how I see it. If I'm in control of a community and I like business A, but not necessarily business B, one of the ways you can change that is by changing the tax rate. Now, this bill, as this is coming into play, basically does not change the tax rate of Company A. But it changes the tax rate of Company B. We've heard testimony up to 3 times, 300% of the tax. I would suggest to you that if you vote yes on this bill, you are voting products and or industries out of the fair marketplace. If you vote no on this bill, you're saying, you know, the tax policy's been here forever. Let's leave it alone. Let's possibly come back later and look at a different way of taxing it. If we're taxing it because we're wanting more revenue, if we're taxing it because we want more health benefits, then raise the tax as it is now. Do not come in and change the way that we tax products. In the First Amendment, we saw the little packets that you have. They're very, very small. They are not going to have hardly any weight, and as we go along, these products are going to be even lighter. So all I would ask you to do is think of that when you're voting on this. I'm not sure which way the amendment goes. It depends if the sponsor withdraws his amendment or goes on. But if it comes to a vote on the bill, when your name's called here in a couple of minutes, just think if it's good tax policy to tax a product no matter if you agree with it or not, or an industry out of our fair market play. Mr. Speaker, thank you.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, one point to keep in mind is that during the evaluation of this legislation, we looked at those issues of weight base and possibly manufacturers coming in with really light products to get around a weight-based tax system. And that's why there's a floor set in the bill. That's why there is a minimum. You can have a nearly weightless product, and you're still going to be paying a minimum under this bill. The other point I think that deserves some mention is I think the bill does exactly the opposite of what the good representative from Laramie County indicated. When this tax system was first implemented, there was essentially one tier of smokeless tobacco, the top tier. The market has evolved over time so that now you have these sort of dirt cheap tobacco products, maybe a dollar a can coming into the market. And so what this tax policy does is actually catch up to the realities of the marketplace. It says we as a legislature aren't going to essentially subsidize you low price low-price tobacco products because the health impacts, the impacts on society are exactly the same as these higher-priced products. So we're going to tax you the same. It's rather than a favoritism, it's actually catching us up to what the realities of the market are. And so with that in mind, I would urge the body to vote in favor of the bill.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, would you come up, please? Representative Villaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For the bill and against the amendment, this bill is not about social engineering. As has been said by one of the good representatives from Natrona County, it's about tax policy. And why shouldn't we change tax policy? That's in our purview. Why shouldn't we just go ahead and do some things that seem right? And I'd get you to take a look at, if I can't keep it up here, I'd get you to take a look at page 4. And I'd like to get you to look at the bottom of page 4. And it says, in addition, and this is new language, in addition to the other taxes imposed by this section, there is levied and assessed upon moist snuff purchased or imported into this state by wholesalers for resale an excise tax at the rate of 60 cents for, what's the word? Any amount of moist snuff up to 1 ounce. Plus a proportionate tax at the like rate on any fractional parts of more than 1 ounce. This says that any weight is at least 60 cents and then plus. The tax on moist snuff shall be imposed based on the net weight as listed by the manufacturer. So 1 ounce is 60 cents. No matter how light that can is, no matter how much stuff is in that can, 1 ounce is going to cost you 60 cents. So it's time that we take a look at how this bill has been written. It's been carefully crafted by the Revenue Committee. You can go on and take a look at on page 5, paragraph F. I'm not going to belabor the point, but it's time that we did change to a weight-based product. And so I am for the bill and against the amendment.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment and for the bill. It seems only rational to me that a fair tax policy is you tax it all equally on the same basis. And to hear that it's fair now makes me think, how is it fair? It's a per unit tax is what it should be on this product. And it seems to me that all the other issues about it are superfluous and irrelevant. The question is, do you tax it on a per unit basis to make it fair? Thank you.
Anybody for their second time? Anybody for their second time? Representative Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems there are two different realms of arguments. One's on fiscal tax policy, one's on social policy. So let me address them both. We talked about fairness and the current fairness. Is it fair now? I would argue that it is. I don't know. Where do I want to start here? When you talk about our tax policy and the tax policy of this body, when did our tax policy become putting companies out of business? Because that's what we're doing here. If we pass this, we are putting two products. It would be different if we started with a fair market system and it was fair right now, but it's not. Let me ask a question hypothetically. How many moist snuff tobacco products can you name? There are two that come to mind, I would think, in most of your minds. How many of you can name a cheaper product? If you put all the products the same, what are people going to buy? The two that have spent the last 20 or 30 years advertising heavily. The other big argument on both fiscal and social policy brought up by the good representative from Worland and the good representative from Johnson County is this going to decrease youth access to tobacco or not? And if that's where you're viewing this bill, let me give you some food for thought. DIP right now, I'm going to call it DIP if that's okay with everyone. It would be one thing if the nicotine level in all of these products were the same, but it's not. The cheaper and cheaper brands at this point have lower nicotine levels than the higher products, currently the most expensive. Do I think the current products with the higher nicotine levels are going to decrease the level of nicotine in their products when everything becomes the same price? I don't. Do I think that the cheaper brands that are now cheaper that will be the same price are going to increase the nicotine levels? Probably more likely. Will youth who already chew use the name brands because they're all the same cost? I would argue to you yes. So if you're already addicted to this substance, we're going to tax you more, and you're more likely to buy the products that have the higher nicotine levels. I've also, on the previous amendment, I argued there are new products coming into the system right now that are designed to increase, I guess in my mind, youth access to tobacco. Over the last 10 years, you've seen cigarette sales go down. You've seen snuff. You've seen pipe tobacco go down. The only segment of the tobacco market that's growing right now is what I guess we will call moist snuff. So there are more products in the market designed to hook youth on this product, and now we're going to put all of the current moist snuff tobacco products the same price, but the name brands that everybody knows have higher nicotine levels. Do I think more youth will be addicted and this will be more harmful to our youth if we pass this bill? I would argue yes, but I am very happy the good representative from Laramie County put an amendment on second reading that we will have to come back and address this in 5 years if this bill were to pass. However, I will ask you to kill it today, as we did 2 years ago, and thank you.
Representative Zwanitzer, would you please withdraw your third reading amendment number one to House Bill 55? I only ask you because that is the standard.
That is standard. Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw it, and we'll have a fair vote on this.
Thank you. House Bill 67, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel. Brechtel? No. Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
No.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquivel. Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer. Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Heasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 37 ayes, 23 noes.
House Bill 67, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 67 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 101.
House Bill 101, introduced by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding excise tax manufacturing exemption.
House Bill
being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Excuse me, Mr. Reading Clerk. House Bill 101, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger. Blake.
No.
Bonner. Bonner. Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson. Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon. Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
No.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart. Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 45 ayes, 15 noes.
House Bill 101, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 101 has passed the House. Representative Harshman.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the 60th, it's not very often that folks from Casper get down here on a Monday morning. But I'd like to introduce Dan Dalen is an instructor at Casper College in athletic training, and he's also president of the State Athletic Training Association. And next to him, if you could stand, Dan, and next to him is his daughter, Madison. She's a sixth grader at CY Junior High, and next to Madison is Savannah Kraft, a junior at Natrona County High School and a student athletic trainer, and one of Mr. Dalen's students, Angie Maris, is a sophomore at Casper College, a second-year student in athletic training. They're down here lobbying on the PT bill that was in the Senate this morning, so welcome to the House.
Welcome to the House of Representatives, Dan and Madison and Savannah and Angie. It's good to have you here today.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Dirks.
Requesting privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Members of the body in the gallery is a young lady who's been watching this august group since she was about 2 years old. And this last summer she joined our page Taylor Lenz and became one of the leaders at Wyoming Girls State. She's interested in politics, and she's interested in watching what we're doing today. The 2008 Girls State Governor, Diane Dirks.
Welcome, Diane. It's great to see you again. It's always nice to see you. Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I helped out on Girls State. Where were you?
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry about that. But, Mr. Speaker, just for the freshmen around here, If I'm mistaken, sorry about that. But let's show a little bit more enthusiasm for greeting these people.
You'll be graded on your enthusiasm. Representative Stebson.
Mr. Speaker, can I have privilege of the floor? And to give you an opportunity to express this newfound enthusiasm, I'd like to introduce some folks in the gallery. Finnegan Stubson, Mead Stubson, and their mother, Susan.
Welcome, Finnegan and Mead and Susan. Nice to see you here. Hi, boys. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, it's not very often that somebody from Laramie gets over here. We have such an individual here today, Mr. Grant Shoemaker, the Albany County Assessor. Would you please welcome him to the House?
Welcome, Grant. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. And in honor of this day today, he has brought his family with him to watch how he does in the chair. Representative Stubson.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 4. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 4, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish immunocontraceptives. Mr. Speaker, this bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which respectfully reported back with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Childers?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 4 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will now turn the floor over to the good Representative Connolly. Being that she's a freshman, I expect you folks to be kind to her, or you'll answer to me.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see a standing committee amendment on that bill.
Mr. Chairman, I stand corrected. I'll back out the amendment.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for not having an amendment that I didn't know about. HB 004, Game and Fish Immunocontraceptives, came to the Interim Committee at the request of Game and Fish to address an issue that has come about because of new techniques to control wildlife fertility. This law would grant the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission authority to regulate the administration of immunocontraceptives to wildlife. The development and use of these new chemical, biological, and physical procedures to control wildlife fertility are causing states across the country to add provisions, such as the one before us, to their laws. These immunocontraceptives are being used successfully in major urban areas to control white-tailed deer populations, and because of that need, the use of these currently unregulated methods is expected to grow. The Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, an organization representing all 50 state wildlife agencies, including Wyoming's Game and Fish Commission, has identified the increase in the development and use of these substances without public oversight as a serious threat to the traditional model of public management of wildlife population. In our case, that's hunting. This bill addresses the potential problem in the public's ability to regulate wildlife fertility and reproduction by granting Game and Fish Commission the authority to regulate the use of immune contraceptives by adding section little XXX to the power and duties of Game and Fish under Wyoming Statutes 23-1-302. Thank you, and I stand for questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can't let a first-time introducer of a bill get by without any questions. First question I have is that there are problems with the animals inside city limits, and could this be used inside city limits, for instance, if it has to be administered with an air gun or something of that nature?
Representative Conley.
Mr. Chair, at this point, the technology is that it needs to be administered deer by deer or antelope by antelope. But the Game and Fish Commission is confident that over time it could be administered easier, and so the need for regulation.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a brief question about the genesis of the need for this technology. We have always, through active game management, managed numbers and population by issuing of licenses, which is extremely cheap and easy to do. I just would question the need for this. I don't understand how this would be more effective and cheaper in the long run than just issuing more licenses if you have more numbers than what you need.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In answer to the good representative's question, right now we don't have this problem here in Wyoming, but it is a problem in the East where white-tailed deer are running amok, is our understanding, in New Jersey and outside of New York City. And what's happening in those communities is that hunting licenses aren't a possible way for controlling herd size, that you don't want people shooting in suburban neighborhoods. And so Game and Fish is using immune contraceptives in order to control wildlife fertility. But our regulations right now, all 29 of them, about the powers and authority of Game and Fish, doesn't allow for regulation of immune contraceptives. This provision would simply expand the duties of the Game and Fish Commission right now to regulate immune contraceptives if they were ever needed here in Wyoming.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that's kind of an advantage to coming to the legislature is to hear about how things are in other parts of the state. And for the good representative from Laramie, or from Fort Laramie country, I drove by a field up in Sheridan County last year, and golly, there was a lot of white-tailed deer out in that field. And later on, I was at the Game and Fish office, and I said to him, I said, you know, I drove by so-and-so's field, and I said, that there must have been, it was a third-cutting alfalfa was still in the field. I said, there must have been 300 deer in that 40 acres. And he said, well, you're wrong on both counts. He said, there were 600 deer in 60 acres. And so that's how a white-tailed deer population can explode. It's just unbelievable.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would note that the previous speaker did tone down his comments a little, as you noticed how he looks.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if there had been any discussion about potential environmental impacts regarding, you know, chemicals to groundwater, those kinds of things, having no understanding of this at all. Thank you, Mr.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the simple answer is no, that wasn't discussed at all.
All right. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with recommendation that bill, House Bill number 4, do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 4 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 11. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 11, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish, dogs chasing wildlife. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which respectfully reported back with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Childers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, now that I finally got my act together, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 11 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And also, a new man on the block, I would welcome the good representative from Park County and little town called Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bonner.
Chairman Childers is saddled with a lot of freshmen this time around. House Bill 11 is a cleanup effort. It was brought to the committee in the interim by the Wyoming Game Wardens Association, a request to make clear in statute that dogs running or chasing big game animals can, in certain circumstances, constitute a violation of law. I think that was the intent of the legislature when they passed the law. Peace officers presently have the authority to issue a summons, issue a warning, or even arrest on for dogs running wildlife, threatening and injuring them. Or they can kill the dog. But the prosecution of the dog owner for a criminal offense has been something somewhat problematic. The statute, though granting authority to make an arrest, does not clearly set forth a criminal act. HB 11 would change that so that it would satisfy the original intent of the law, setting out a violation for which offenders could be prosecuted. This bill would give game wardens an enforcement option to killing the dog or dogs. There is an exception in the law that dogs attempting to protect livestock are not in violation of this statute. House Bill 11 has the support of the Wyoming Game Wardens Association, the Wyoming Wool Growers, and the Wyoming Stock Growers. And I will explain the Standing Committee Amendment now, and it is on page 2 of the bill.
And Representative Bonner, have you moved Standing Committee Amendment number 1?
I believe it was moved by the chairman.
Thank you.
The Standing Committee Amendment on line 2, page 2, lines 1 and 2 of the bill, returns to the language of the present statute to make it unlawful for a dog, and I'll read the operative proposed words in lines 1 and 2, to make it unlawful for a dog to injure or threaten a big game animal with injury. Now, that replaces the word harass, the committee feeling it was preferable to say it to injure or to threaten with injury, feeling that the term harass was a little vague, more open to question. That, Mr. Chair, is the bill and Standing Committee 1 before you.
All right, and I do want to remind the members to resist the temptation of talking about specific groups that may be lobbying or specific names while you're debating on the floor. Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a question on the Standing Committee amendment. And to me, the word threaten seems more vague and than even the word harass. So I guess you're going to have to show me an example of how a dog or can threaten big game. Is it just, can he stand at his front porch when the deer comes by and bark? Is that threatening? I just need a little bit more explanation on the use of that word.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you. In response, I hope, to the representative from Hot Springs County, dogs don't actually have to be biting a big game animal to be to inflict injury. We heard testimony that dogs running or chasing or pressuring big game animals, sometimes over long periods of time, particularly in cold weather, can stress the animal to the point that it, for all practical purposes, the existence of the big game animal is threatened.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I stand in opposition to the amendment. I find the word harass to actually be a better word than the word threaten, because when you read this, threaten with immediate injury, I read that to mean that the dog needs to be have the potential of biting the big game animal and injuring it in that manner. Harass to me deals with the more normal situation that you're dealing with. In Teton County, we deal with this quite a lot, where elk are being essentially run to death. They chase them, but the dog is never actually trying to injure the elk. He's never trying to bite them. He's just chasing them. And in deep snow, they get running in the deep snow, and it tires them, and then it leads to them getting scabies, and then they die, you know, months later, perhaps because of the exhaustion of that chase. It just seems to me harass seems to be a much more encompassing word that would take care of that situation of chasing rather than the actual crime of biting. But maybe that's, I'm just reading it wrong.
May I, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bonner.
In response to the representative from Teton County, we would, the committee would completely agree that we do not want the word immediate in the statute, and that's why the amendment removed the word immediate. We're not talking about immediate threatening with immediate injury. We are concerned about the stress inflicted on animals in what may be a long chase.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this amendment, and let's be sure we understand what we're saying. Before we said harass a big game animal. Now, and the language with immediate injury was deleted. Now, what we said, the problem with that is, what about, and I think the specific example we heard in committee was, what about the rancher that's got a dog and they go out every day and there's a bunch of elk hanging around the haystack and he lets the dog out and the dog goes and runs them away from the haystack? Is he breaking the law by allowing his dog to do that? And I think if we leave the word harass in there, he is, in fact, breaking the law. And there are numerous examples of dogs being used not for anything except to just shoo off the livestock. That is harassment. So we changed it, and you have to read the language in its full context, which we changed harass to injure or threaten with injury to distinguish between the two situations. Now, there's another amendment coming that I rather like. It says for the protection of livestock or other property, and that could be the case. And it sort of makes the point that it's an exemption. There is an exemption for something that's protecting property, even if it does injure or threaten a big game animal with immediate or with injury. But it doesn't have to say immediate. We took the word out of immediate out of there to try to get to an equilibrium here where we're talking about dogs that are allowed to do actual harm to livestock, and we're trying to find a way to exempt dogs which are used in conflict with big game animals but for other purposes. And I said livestock, I should have said big game. So if they're going to injure or threaten a big game animal with injury, that's one thing. If they're going to simply shoo them off or use them for some other protective purpose that doesn't involve injury, and you all know your own dogs. My dog had chased a deer 100 yards and quit. And if you know that that's what your dog does and your dog is not actually going to threaten that big game animal with injury, it's not going to injure or threaten them with injury, but they're being used for another purpose, then we tried to find a way that the owners of those dogs would not be turned into lawbreakers. So on and in favor of the amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a little different venue. My number one constituent would give her shiny dollar if our dog would just harass those deer that are eating her flowers.
Any other discussion on standing or on standing committee amendment number one? Okay, the question having been called on standing amendment number one, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one is passed committee of the whole. We are now on committee of the whole amendment number one. Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee of the whole amendment number one to House Bill 11 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, an example was just brought up that I hadn't, that it wasn't my main purpose, but that was the idea of forage and hay to be protected. But what my main thought was whenever I read this is I have a constituent who has started a tree and shrub nursery, and even though he has fenced it off, he's also concerned about primarily buck deer getting into the area. And so he's put a doghouse in there and has a couple Australian shepherds that he hopes will become possessive of that property and run the deer out. We also have a number of people that are starting market gardens in Sheridan. And so basically what it amounts to is that I was wanting to protect other agricultural operations and not just livestock they too could protect their property in case primarily what I was focusing on was buck deer is they can really thrash a lot of trees and nursery stock in short order and do a lot of damage. And so that's what this amendment was designed to protect.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Strong support of this committee, the whole amendment to this House bill. You know, the need for this bill conjures up images that we've already talked about of dogs running loose out of people's control, doing injury to wildlife. But without this amendment, I'm really concerned about going down the road that this bill provides. Livestock owners they need to be able to protect their livestock. They also need to be able to protect, is what this amendment calls for, their other personal property, and that would be their haystacks and those kind of things, their barns, their gardens, their yards, The image I really want you to see is a stock dog or another pet under the control of the owner, just having the freedom, the liberty to move these game animals away from away from their buildings, away from their trees, away from their nurseries, away from their haystacks, away from their feedlots, and not be subject to penalty of law. That's deer in many parts of the state are really probably provide more harassment to people than what people or dogs do to them. They're getting to be a nuisance and have the ability to destroy the personal property. So this amendment makes this bill more palatable. I'm somewhat still concerned about the slippery slope that we're going down here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just had a question. How about deer harassing dogs? This was a really serious case in Rollins, and it happened to a county commissioner. His dog was in his own yard, in his backyard, and the dog come in the backyard, or the deer come in the backyard and actually attacked the dog and killed it. And he wasn't very happy, and so just a question, but it does happen.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I can't answer for sure, but I think the Game and Fish would be more than happy to come around and chase the animal out. But, you know, that's the unfortunate thing about the wildlife in this state. However, you know, the breed of the dogs that one of the previous speakers talked about, the Australian Shepherd, you know, it's just in their nature, as well as other similar breeds, that they're very protective of property. And quite frankly, even at my house, if it was pure dirt, our Australian Shepherd would chase the deer out. Realize that my wife and I are owned by that animal.
Chairman Gingrey.
On and for the amendment.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, and I'm slowly starting to be against the whole bill, my difficulty is that the intent, I would hope, was to protect the wildlife, and we seem to be not liking our wildlife with this bill. And maybe one way of changing that is maybe we could put deer in separately. What my concern is that with this amendment, I mean, I have a willow, I have quite a lot of willows in my backyard. Last winter, I had a moose and a calf decide that my backyard was the place to live for the winter. If I didn't like them stripping my willows bare, which they did, under this law, I can sick my dog. I don't have a dog, but I have a cat, but, but she's a tough cat. But if I had a dog, I could sick my dog on that moose and her calf every day without violating the law. Actually, how I read this, my dog could go out and bite the moose and injure the moose, but it'd be fine because I was trying to protect my little willow tree that I like in the backyard. I think there's got to, I understand where the bringer of the amendment is going. Perhaps, you know, there's a better way of saying that. Perhaps landscaping business or something of that sort, where someone's actually growing these trees for a purpose of profit, not just me wanting to protect my little willow tree in the backyard. That would be my concern with this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and for the amendment, and again, as everyone is starting to realize, the slippery slope of this bill as well, and being one of those people who worked on ranches most of his life, opening the door of the tractor and letting the dog out to get the elk out of the stack, and really they knew their job wasn't done until they came back with some hair in their mouth. And wondering what kind of issues we would be opening up with this, and also to underscore the words from my other representative from Carbon County. In more towns than one, do we have a serious issue with big game typically deer in our small communities. And definitely this reverse osmosis happening to where we have our wildlife harassing and injuring and killing some of our pets in our small communities. And I feel that this definitely is an issue that needs raised and possibly addressed at some point in this bill. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the bill or on the amendment? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have it on good information that the representative from House District 1 and the representative from House District 47 both intend to raise petunias in their old age. And they're going to want the dog to keep the deer away from the petunias, so I don't know where we're going here. Mr. Chairman, on a more serious note, we lost a court case over this statute. That's where this started from. If you look at the deleted language, it used to say a peace officer may arrest or issue a summons to the owner of any dog injuring or threatening a big game animal. We lost a court case over that because we had a determination from a court that that didn't make it against the law. All it did was authorize a peace officer to arrest or issue a summons, but there was no clear delineation in the law that the activity was unlawful. So that's the reason that that we got this bill in the first place, was to change the statute and make it clear that that allowing a dog under some circumstances to bother wildlife, however it was going to be, would be unlawful conduct. So that's how we got to where we are, and the question now is, how do we temper that in such a way that we don't make a lawbreaker out of somebody unintentionally? And so our intent here is that if a person is either knowingly or negligently allowing a dog to injure or threaten injury to a big game animal, then that's unlawful conduct. But if a person's using a dog in a way that many of our citizens in the state do, whether it be to run a deer out of the backyard that's bothering the petunias, or run them away from the haystack, run them out of the barn, or whatever it may be, that would not be unlawful conduct. So this is that's the balance that we've tried to strike here. I rather like this amendment because it does make an exemption, even if they do come back with some hair in their mouth, if they're protecting livestock or other property. But if they're not protecting livestock or other property and they come back with some hair in their mouth, then I think the owner of that dog has broken the law. So I think it's a good amendment. I think it's a good bill. Without this bill, we're not going to have the ability, and as the law is right now after that court case, we're not going to have the ability to declare anybody in violation of the law whose dog is injuring or threatening to injure a big game animal. So on and for the amendment and for the bill.
Any other discussion? All right, we are on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. We are back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? The question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill Number 11 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill Number 11 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bonner.
May I just to apologize to the House and say I appreciate in this learning experience the gentle chastening from the chair. Never again shall advocacy groups pass my lips. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. We are on the next bill, House Bill 80. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 80, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the utilization of carbon sequestration sites. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which respectfully returned recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Peasley, Quarburg, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises a report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 80 do pass. It's actually Substitute Number 1 for House Bill 80 do pass. Mr. Chairman, I believe actually I have to move an amendment, a standing committee amendment, to make it to approve the Substitute Number 1 to House Bill 80.
I think that's correct. So we have the motion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, which is Substitute Number 1 for House Bill 80. The question being called, the issue before us is Standing Committee Number 1, Substitute Number 1 for House Bill 80. All in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill. Chairman Gingrey.
And Mr. Chairman, I would turn this bill over to the good gentleman from Campbell County to explain. It's a real simple bill.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you thought Friday was fun, wait till today. I bring you House Bill 80. This is a bill that's designed to protect the rights of poor space owners, allow fair and equitable payment of poor space economic benefits, and avoid eminent domain application to poor space. I again have to give credit to the hard work done from the good representative from Laramie County, who I went to high school with, for taking what was a fairly rough conceptual draft bill and turning it into a working, operating draft. The bill is based on the oil and gas unitization statutes and pulls over many concepts from oil and gas law to make the unitization concept work in poor space. I will tell you that nobody anywhere has ever done this before, and I've looked. So we are plowing new ground here. The bill is designed to protect corresponding rights. I passed a handout that looks like a little footprint inside a big footprint with my name on it. If you look at the handout shows a CO2 plume. And what we know is that CO2 migrates under the surface over a period of time. CO2 may take many years to reach a position of homeostasis. By the time it reaches that point, the income generated off the carbon dioxide sequestration site may cease. What this bill is to determine scientifically the extent and nature of CO2 that will be stored under any particular tract of land and set forth fair and reasonable compensation after a hearing process. Assume a CO2 sequestration project will operate for 10 years. That would be the little footprint. The income stream will stop at year 10 when the project quits operating. This bill will ensure that all people affected over the life of the product will be paid for the use of their property from day one, no matter if it takes 20 years for the CO2 to get to their property or not. The amount of tract participation will be determined by scientific testimony in front of the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The bill also provides that if 80% of the people in a carbon sequestration project area consent to the project, the other 20% can be brought into the unit to protect the corresponding rights of all parties. What is different about this design than the eminent domain model is that instead of one payment up front, the pore space owner receives payments over the life of the project. Additionally, the pore space owner, through the hearing process, has the rights to input into the operation of the carbon sequestration project that would not be available under the eminent domain model. Let's look at the language of the substitute bill. Page 1 is a statement of legislative purpose, a valid exercise of police power to protect corresponding rights. Top of page 2 adopts carbon sequestration definitions. The middle of page 2 is a definition of corresponding rights, which is the core of the bill. The bottom of page 2 gives any interested person the right to file an application to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to unitize a geologic sequestration site. Page 3 and going on from page 3 sets forth the requirements of the application. A copy of the carbon capture and sequestration permit draft permit or application, a definition of pore space that's going to be used. The names and addresses of all persons owning surface, pore space, and minerals as disclosed by the county records within and adjacent to the carbon sequestration project. A description of the types of operations contemplated, a proposed plan of unitization, a description of how the pore space quantity and quality is to be evaluated within each tract of land, a plan for generation of economic benefits, and a management and operation plan. On the bottom of page 5, the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission sets the matter for hearing, and it requires at least 30 days' notice prior to the hearing. The middle of page 6 begins the required findings of the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission that the allegations in the applications are substantially true, that the purpose served by granting the application is true, that the operations will comply with all environmental requirements, that it will facilitate the use and production of Wyoming energy resources, pore space is allocated to the tracts based on the actual share of the pore space and the carbon dioxide stored in the pore space, method of allocating economic benefits is fair and reasonable, the method of generating economic benefits is fair and reasonable, and if people have not executed the unit plan, that it fairly and equitably provides for assignment of storage-based capacity, provides for removal of the unit operator once all permit requirements have been satisfied, makes adjustment to pore space owners for the respective investments in the process, and a fair allocation of costs, if any. And then finally, there's a catch-all that if the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission would like to add additional requirements by regulation, it can. The middle of page 9 requires a ratification of the unit by persons owning at least 80% of the storage capacity within the unit area execution, have to execute the plan. After 9 months of trying real hard, that can be diminished to 75% upon a showing of good faith. If unitized, only one unit operator can operate that unit and no one else because that's the permit holder and the person who's been authorized under the plan to operate the unit. The order can be amended upon the receipt of the consent by the same percentage of pore space owners as above. On the top of page 14, the Oil and Gas Commission or upon the application of any person can modify the order to prevent substantial inequity in the operation of the unit. Middle of page 14, people who are not included in the unit who think they should have been included have a right to petition to join the unit. Then a notice of hearing process specified throughout the page 14 and on to page 15. On the top of page 16, a unitization order must be recorded. On the middle of page 16, an order of the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission will not terminate or modify any contracts, and a unitization order will not confer a transfer of any or all rights in pore space. The Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, in other words, doesn't have the ability to transfer title. On page 17, section 2 of the bill grants the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission the power to adopt rules and regulations and works. And what you have to understand that before you get to the unitization process, you have to have gone through all of the processes that I talked to for the permitting on Friday. So this isn't just a casual drop in and get a unit process. You will have had to assess the geology, assess the risks, proposed a bond, and what this statute does and what the good representative from Laramie County made sure it did was it works in conjunction with the DEQ permitting process that we created in House Bill 90 last year to create an efficient process that promotes the environment and also protects property rights. With that, I'd stand for any questions.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question for the good representative from Campbell County, and that I think we need to know as a body the effort and work that the Oil and Gas Commission were asked about as they look at this bill and what their responsibilities are, because that's a huge part of how this will impact or not impact people. And some additional discussion for the body as a whole, I think, is very important.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I
On page 5, lines 4 through 6, and this has to do with the filing of an application with the Oil and Gas Commission. When an application for other activities is filed with the Oil and Gas Commission, is there ever any consideration that the Oil and Gas Commission has on generating economic benefits? The economic benefits portion in this bill seems to be something I never have seen before, but maybe that's just me. That seldom has there ever been a government agency that cares much about whether or not a private activity is going to generate an economic activity. So that would be my first question. My next question is on page 8, lines 9 through 12. That seemed to be... That also is kind of an economic issue. That had to do with Little Romanet 8, where in the event that a pore space owner in the unit area has not executed their agreement, that even before they even in the plan, it has to have a plan for how to remove that unit operator and for the appointment of a successor operator. That seems like that would be difficult. You would think that somebody else might buy them. And E on that same page was kind of curious to me, where the plan provided an allocation of the cost, and it sounds like that it would provide that allocation among the various pore space holders. That seemed to me to imply that the costs are going to be assigned to those pore space owners, as if they would be required to invest in this. I have some other questions, but I might stop there and let the bringer of the amendment discuss those.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the question of the good representative from Natrona County, it was the Oil and Gas Commission asked, yes. And actually, the State Public Lands Administrator reviewed this bill, and we have her comments and have included many in the substitute bill. With respect to the concerns of my good friend, the chairman from Sheridan County, with respect to the plan of generating economic benefits, the term economic benefits is new because we don't know what carbon sequestration economic benefits look like. But if you look in the unitization statutes in Title 30, you will find that the Wyoming Oil and Gas Commission is certainly interested in the plan of marketing oil and distributing that oil to tract folks, and that it has to be fair and equitable. You'll find nearly a direct parallel to that. With respect to removal of the unit operator, that is also parallel language out of our Wyoming unitization statutes. With respect to the assignment of costs, if any, again, in drafting this bill, we didn't believe it was the position of the state legislature to tell parties what their agreements would be. My vision of contracts for pore space or leases for pore space based on oil and gas traditions is that the landowner will bear no costs and their interest shall be free of costs. But if that's not the case, and if the parties decide to bear costs, then the plan for assignment of costs, if any, has to be fair and equitable, so that you're assigning the income and you're assigning the costs. And that's why the language says assignment of cost, if any, is fair and equitable. And that's the reason why that was there. I guess I'm ready for more interrogation.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suspect that part of my answer resides in the bills that we passed last week, but the issue that I'm concerned with is the issue of let's say I'm a rancher, which I am, and that I have one of these unitization aspects from which I'm receiving income. I sell my ranch, but I want to retain the income from my pore space, so I retain the rights to the income from my pore space. Is that possible to have that same kind of severability that we have with mineral rights? And if such, the owner of the surface no longer receives the income from the CO2 when I have sold my ranch. I'd like that to be explained, please.
Representative Lubnow.
Mr. Chairman, the answer to the question of my good friend from Washakie County is yes. You can sever the pore space. We had a big debate on that in the last legislative session. We determined that you could sever the pore space. In the instrument of severance, you have to decide and describe specifically the rights of access that you have to the surface, or you get none. In the hierarchy of the way that we structured things by default, there's a case from Wyoming, Mingo Oil, that's the leading case that says that the mineral estate is dominant over the servient surface estate. Below that, the surface is dominant. The way that we did that was by default. You can change that by virtue of contract and make the pore space dominant if you want to. But you have to decide that as a matter of contract. And we made a policy decision last year that it wasn't the Wyoming legislature's business on how ranchers run their ranches and how they want to deal with their property rights. And so we didn't want to unnecessarily restrict them. If you want to run your ranch a certain way, so long as you don't interfere with someone else's property rights or create damage, you should be able to run your property the way you should run it. And that was the approach that we took last year.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A follow-up question to that then, and that is the issue that many of us involved in mineral royalty rights in the state face, and that is as that day goes forward, that it passes down through generations, it almost becomes impossible to track who actually has the ownership of that pore space once it's been severed. And is there a way at this point in history, in time, to avoid that issue that we face with minerals? Is there any way to track that in a better way at this point?
Representative Lubnow.
Mr. Chairman, there is, but I haven't proposed it in any of the legislation that we have. You can follow the North Dakota approach, which says after a period of time, if the minerals or the pore space is not developed, it reverts back to the surface or mineral owner. North Dakota has some legislation there. I have my hands full with this, so I haven't proposed any of that.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I definitely appreciate the single-mindedness of purpose the bringers of this bill show. And I just got to tell you, I am somewhat confused by that part of me that recognizes such that this issue evokes such emotion from me. Yet I cannot quiet that voice that I hear. I would maintain that it's our jobs as the free thinkers of our state to question everything. And we have been told we must prepare for this world in a carbon-constrained world or a carbon-free world. And I would tell you that I think Wyoming will do just fine in that world when it finally descends on us if we proceed with caution in this regard. And when I say we proceed with caution, what words come to mind is that we proceed with good sound data. Already, we have altered our abilities to realize expectations from just last year due to recently implemented federal regulations. In this constantly evolving world of this carbon-constrained world, I would maintain that we should probably wait until certain pilot projects are completed, and we can live up to this saying that I hold dear to my heart, that in God we trust, everyone else has to bring data. I think that this is the bill that we could exercise some caution and slow down. And absent that, I'll probably bring a second committee amendment, second reading amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the good representative from Campbell County subjecting himself to the Inquisition, as he said. I just had a couple other questions. On page 9, it has to do with the what the number of persons who have pore space in a certain area, how many have to be on board, and it proposes there be an 80% majority. I think that having a super majority is a good idea in things like this because it does protect the minority. But then it goes through a lot of, alternatives to try to get down to 75% if you can't reach 80. I was just wondering why we went through all that, why not set a certain percentage, and also what the role of eminent domain was if you could not achieve that supermajority. Those are my questions on page 9. Then on page 11, on little d, it talks about the operation of one of these unit areas by the person or the person acting under the unit operator's authority, and that for someone else to operate it was unlawful and prohibited. That seemed to lock in the property owner, and I didn't know whether that was very realistic. I wondered why that particular part was in there. It sounds like they couldn't sell or transfer that. And finally, I wondered about the role of bonding with this sort of activity, that in order to fulfill promises, that's used in quite a bit of our other statutes, and wondered, I didn't see that in here, and wondered what the if that had also been talked about.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the comments of my good friend from Carbon County, I don't know if single-mindedness is exactly the case. There have been lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of sleep lost and lots of alternatives pursued to get to this product today. And I appreciate our obligation to question everything, and I would never ask this body to vote for something that hopefully I didn't know all the answers to the questions. So feel free to ask questions, because I think it's important that we examine things fully and fairly. We did it through 3 meetings with testimony of the finest experts in the world over the summer in the Judiciary Committee. We had a hearing upstairs, and now we're doing it again. With respect to why now with the unitization bill, we have a chicken or an egg problem. The experts tell us that unless we have a device like this in place, no project happens. And so we can either design the product in a way that we like, or we can just wait and see how somebody else is designing it. Now, I'll tell you that a good state, a friend of ours from the far southeast, has got their own carbon sequestration scheme set up. or proposed. It makes it look like a regulated public utility. It grants eminent domain and places the minerals. Well, there's a lot of debate whether they're going to place it with the surface owner or they're just going to claim it as an asset of the state of Wyoming. All of those, I think, are bad public policy. I think that this model is very, very good public policy. I also think that we in this state have provided examples for other states on how to do this in a way that's good public policy. So, the experts tell us we need something like this. I'm not going to argue with them. That's why this bill, and that's why now. With respect to the policy arguments, I described in my prepared remarks why I think this is better policy than eminent domain. I want to give our landowners, our surface owners, an opportunity to share in the continuous income stream. If you use eminent domain, which is the other alternative, then our surface owners are paid one payment. What's the value of a bubble of carbon dioxide under the surface of the ground? Right now, I would tell you probably pretty much next to nothing. When you determine the value for condemnation purposes, it's the value before minus the value after. And so you get paid nearly next to nothing and have no say. I also want our surface owners to have the opportunity to participate through hearing in the management of the sequestration project. This bill does that. And so I think what we have here is the best public policy with respect to bringing data. With respect to the questions of my good friend from Sheridan County, the good chairman from Sheridan County, the reason that we have the 75% reduction language in this statute is because it's in the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission statutes. When I was a freshman legislator, we made that amendment, and a foolish consistency is, of course, the hobgoblin of little minds, and this is my foolish consistency, apparently. With respect to the unit operator, making sure that the person who's licensed or authorized to operate the unit is the person who continues to operate the unit, that's also the permit holder. And we're examining right now the bonding capacity for the permit holders, and we're taking that portion of it that deserves science and needs science, and we're proceeding slowly. And last legislative session, we authorized a carbon sequestration working group, and they're assessing the risks and the financial assurances. And so when you look at the hand-in-glove approach between what was House Bill 90 last year, which is now our permitting process, and this bill, I think that you'll see that they make logical sense, largely in due to the efforts of the good representative from Laramie County, who I went to high school with.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for House Bill 80, again, you know, those of you who were here for the last legislature know I oppose some of this legislation, pretty much all of it, because of all the unintended consequences. But now that we're down this path, the parties involved are trying to make efforts to make this work correctly. Legislation, bills like this, are needed to make it work correctly. So I commend the bringer of this bill, and we need to pass this, and there's going to be a number of other bills we need to pass to make it work. If we start opposing some of these actions right now, we're going to end up with a mess. And if that's the case, then we probably need to go all the way back to what we did last year and get rid of it all. But on and for House Bill 80, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion on the bill? Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I worked for about 4 years and with my previous employer on unitization projects exactly like this, except they were for oil and gas. And I would have to say that I think it's very important for statutes like this to go into place to handle the carbon sequestration and to address the rights of the pore space owners. And while it's somewhat of a complicated bill, it, as the good gentleman from Gillette has said, it tracks a lot of the previous unitization clauses or statutes. So I would say on and for this bill. I think it's important that we initiate the process instead of having a federal agency step back in and tell us what to do.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had the rare privilege of participating in some of the development of these bills. Additionally, the opportunity to take my sleepless nights and read the material that's put out by others. I'm on and for the bill and for a very important reason. Things are going on in this nation, and I think the expertise and effort that we've put in Wyoming are going to shape the future of how this sequestration is handled, and we're starting to see some of that. It's been mentioned by the bringer of the bill. I think we need to continue doing that because we, I think, have probably the most to gain if it's done right of any state in the nation. So I urge your yes vote on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Any other discussion? The question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a recommendation that House Bill Number 80 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 80 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again. At 2 p.m., yes.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. We need committee chairman reports.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Illaway.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet right now. In House 18, we're going to take up House Bill 8, Certified Public Accountants Revisions, and House Joint Resolution 1, City and County Unification.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor. And I know it's committee reports, but this is going to come pretty close to that.
Go ahead, Chairman Lockhart.
For north of 20 years, we've had what's called the legislative prayer breakfast that's met every week during a session with a variety of folks that would assemble, and we'd have speakers at that one. Our first one will be this coming Thursday at 6:30 at the Egg and I. The cost of the breakfast will be $4, and I'd urge all of you to consider coming, but to let me know if you would. If you're going to plan to do that, so I can make sure that we have enough $4 breakfast to satisfy your needs and help Egg and I.
Chairman Gingrey.
Mr. Chairman, your Committee 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet this afternoon upon adjournment in room H-17 to consider House Bill 105, Notification of Bloodborne Pathogens, and House Bill 92, Long-Term Care Partnership Program.
Thank you, Chairman Landon. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee number 1 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to consider 5 bills, HB 106, Firearm Ownership, Domestic Violence Offenses, House Bill 165, Adult Adoption, House Bill 150, Peace Officer Definition, House Bill 135, Recreational Safety Act, and House Bill 98, Mandatory Minimum Sentence for Sex Abuse of a Minor.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, your House Committee number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment this evening in room 302 to take up House Bill 114, Community Colleges Amendments.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, will meet at 1 p.m. in room 302 to consider adoption of the permanent rules for the 60th legislature and other proposed rule changes. Thank you.
All right. The committee of the whole will stand in recess until 2 p.m.